If you love Snapped, you're going to love listening to true crime or mystery titles on Audible. The latest mind-bending title I'm obsessed with is How to Solve Your Own Murder by Kirsten Perrin. A fortune teller predicts a young Frances Adams will be murdered, leading her into a paranoid frenzy, trying to solve her own murder before it even happens. Nearly 60 years later, Frances is killed, and it becomes her great-niece's mission to solve the case. With female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, and traditional audiobooks, Audible has you covered for every genre you're looking for in audio entertainment. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. It is the home of storytelling, after all. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/snapped or text snapped to 500-500. That's audible.com/snapped or text snapped to 500-500.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hi, Snap listeners. We are bringing you a special bonus episode today from Oxygen True Crime's hit series, Real Murders of Orange County. You can also watch full episodes on demand on the free Oxygen app by clicking the link in our description. Enjoy.
It's just the saddest thing in the world to think that Tom and Larry lasted such a short time.
This was one of the most graphic crime scenes I've ever been to.
There was blood everywhere.
Seeing the two dead bodies downstairs and the footprints upstairs, bloody, leaving the area, we definitely had a killer on the loose.
We have to think about whether or not this could be a crime of passion.
I mean, how do you stab someone 28 times?
How could this happen to our friends? We were in total disbelief that it could have happened.
We found a whole slew of cards, a card for every day in February.
When the bodies were brought into the coroner's office, the question as to whether or not this was a love triangle. He seems to be obsessed. I want this guy dead and I want him to suffer.
That was the saddest day of our lives.
Quintessential family-oriented community.
It's a beautiful city. They have beautiful homes, lovely homes.
And we could go down to Balboa and walk around and dream about having a wonderful a little house on Balboa Island.
It has been the number one safest city for numerous years in a row.
I think if people had money and they had a choice, I think many of them wanted to go and live in Irvine.
It's a beautiful, beautiful, wonderful place to live.
Bad things don't happen very often here, but they do happen.
It's easy to imagine growing old under the golden California sun. But life in this stunning part of Orange County isn't always so pretty. In the summer of 1999, dark clouds roll over the Irvine community of Solana.
I'm Larry Montgomery. In 1999, I was an investigator in charge of the Crimes Against Persons Unit at Irvine Police Department. On the 28th of July of 1999, police department was called because a man and his daughter had gone to a house in Irvine to take a piano lesson, and the people in the house did not respond. The gentleman opened the door and he smelled natural gas in the house, but he still was able to come in a short distance and look down a staircase where he saw what looked like a dead body and immediately called the police department.
My name is Mike Hamill. I'm the chief of police for the city of Irvine in California. In 1999, I was a police detective assigned to crimes against persons here at the Irvine Police Department. A call came out over the radio of a possible 187, which is a murder. When I arrived there, there were about three or four other officers on scene. The paramedics were there, fire was there. We knew that we had to go inside the residence to check on victims, to ensure there were no suspects that were still there.
Once it's determined that there's gas inside that house, you now have to be very careful opening windows, opening doors, and without giving it any source of ignition, like a static electricity. They cordoned off the area, and they were able to shut the gas off in hopes of airing out the house before they could enter safely to help out with the investigation.
So the first thing that I noticed as we were approaching the front door is this red brick porch area. And I could see what appeared to be bloody footprints. We got inside the house and we began to walk around the different areas into the kitchen, to the laundry room. We began to see these bloody footprints all over the house, eventually making our way down the stairs.
Going down those stairs to the first body, that particular individual was on his back and he had numerous stab wounds that we could see, at least they appeared to be stab wounds on his body. Passing him, there was a door to the right, and that was the entranceway to the master bedroom.
We entered the master bedroom and went around the side of the bed, and that's where we saw the second victim. He too had sustained multiple stab wounds.
I don't think I recall a scene that I've been to that had more blood splatter on the walls, on the ceilings.
This was one of the most graphic crime scenes I've ever been to. One of the things that's standard for us doing these cases is to do a neighborhood canvas, talk to all the neighbors. So myself, other detectives did this, and we really came up empty. No one that heard anything that night. Based upon how the crime occurred, there was no sign of forced entry. One of the things that's always important for us to do is to positively identify the victims.
When we got down to the second body in the bedroom, there was actually some clothing there, and in the clothing there was ID for Lawrence Wong.
We had the name of the primary resident to verify the person that we found deceased inside the residence as Tom Whitney. We found his wallet and his identification card.
Tom Whitney, he played the piano, he played a number of instruments, he was 60 years old, and he seemed like a nice individual from everything we learned about him.
My name is Joan Rutkowski. Tom Whitney was my friend. My friend for a long, long time, 1965. We first met while we were graduate students in the music department at USC. He was a happy person. He loved to laugh. We used to laugh so much. He was a really good soul, that kind of good person, that kind of good friend. You pick up the phone and call him, Tom would listen for hours.
My name is Bolin High. I met Tom in New York. He was introduced to me through a mutual friend. He was a very accomplished pianist. He was also a musical director, and he was a wonderful teacher. He loved to teach piano. That was one of the gifts that he was given, is the joy of helping people turn on to music, is the way he put it. And it gave him great joy.
Tom had these incredible eyes. And they were very blue. He looks a little sad here. Being gay was not something that was approved in his family. It was hard. Those days were difficult. Now it's a totally different world we live in.
In our conversation, Tom said, you know, I've met someone that I think could really work. His name is Larry Wong.
Larry was on the same plane as Tom. Larry was a fabulous musician, and of a classical musician, and a wonderful pianist and coach for opera singers.
Larry Wong, somebody who I got to know his character through working this case and interviewing people that were his friends and family, and coming to learn that Larry too was a caring and gentle man Larry worked at LA Harbor College, and I believe that's how Tom and Larry met, was through their love of music.
And I said, well, it sounds as like you met someone that maybe will turn out to be a lasting relationship. He said, I think it might very well.
He was a good match. And it's just the saddest thing in the world to think that it lasted such a short time.
At the crime scene, detectives continue to sort out the pieces of the puzzle.
As part of our overall survey of the entire residence, we look in every nook and cranny. One of the things that we located was a knife block. And in this knife block, it looked like there was a knife that had blood on it. Crime scene investigators and discovered that there were actually two large kitchen knives that were in the knife block that were covered in blood.
Does that mean there's more than one person? Does that mean they used both hands? I don't know. When we looked at the victims, Tom had 36 stab wounds, which is a hefty amount of stab wounds. Larry Wong had 25. That's overkill. Whoever did this, are they more angry with one or over the other? One thing we did notice is there were bloody footprints on the actual tile, really distinct, very accurately placed footprints coming in and out of the areas of the house. After looking at this crime scene, seeing the bloody footprints upstairs away from the victims, we knew we had a killer on the loose, and we don't know who it is.
Detectives find a trail of bloody footprints around Tom's home. Could these gruesome missteps reveal the secret identity of Tom and Larry's killer?
The fact that we only saw one set of bloody footprints probably would limit it to one person using two knives. We now know the size of the foot. We know if we find somebody that knew these people and had a grudge against them and they had the same size foot, that gives us something to look at. Basically, if the sock doesn't fit, it's not going to be that person.
He perhaps met some people that he would not have ever had any contact with under different circumstances.
Larry's sister mentioned that Larry Wong hadn't been in a previous relationship. That was a long-term relationship.
When the police called me, I explained to them, I don't know his name, but I think I know who did it.
We received a telephone call from a family friend very early in the morning saying that Tom and Larry had been killed. And we didn't know how, and we didn't really understand what possibly could have happened. And it was so shocking, the barbarity, the anger, the cruelty, something I've never seen or ever experienced ever. Tremendous sadness, anger. How could this happen to our friends?
My name is Sam Olivato. In 1999, I was the lieutenant in charge of the investigative bureau for the City of Irvine Police Department. Because of the fact that it appeared that there was no forced entry into the residence, initially you would think, okay, this is not a stranger to these two victims. Someone they knew. So that kind of lessens the opinion that this would have been a random attack. Stab wounds on the victims is very personal. That indicates a very heat of passion type of crime.
When we're looking at a crime scene like this, we have to look at exactly what's going on inside and who would have done it.
The brutal murders of newly coupled Larry Wong and Tom Whitney has cast a dark shadow over their cheery Irvine, California neighborhood. While evidence suggests the slayings were committed by someone who knew them, neighbors still feel their loss and wonder when their killer will be found. The murderer left a mess at the crime scene, providing a treasure trove of evidence.
Since we looked at this crime from the point of view of who would do this horrendous amount of stabbing and knew that there was probably consistent with somebody with passion, you could be hurt very easily if the person finds another weapon to come back at you, because they don't die right away, because unless you hit something like a heart or something that'll kill them, but a lot of things won't kill you right away. So this is just not something you plan to do as a crime to get something from the house. It is something you would do if you're passionate about, I want this guy dead and I want him to suffer. So that's what this scene tells us. We may want to look that way. Not guaranteed, but we may want to look that way first. That's where it's pointing towards from the evidence we saw at the scene. We're looking for somebody that had passion either on Larry's side or on Tom's side.
We did have somebody reach out to us, Larry's sister, that mentioned that Larry Wong hadn't been in a previous relationship that was a long-term relationship with someone by the name of John Rarick. And then digging a bit deeper and finding out that John actually had a life insurance policy on Larry, and the fact that Larry was killed, John was going to be the recipient of a large sum of money. We need to ask more questions, dig deeper, examine motives, see if John has an alibi.
John was obviously heartbroken at the time when the breakup occurred. He was angry, he was depressed, but when we gave him the news that the pair had been murdered, he was not overly dramatic.
So one of the things that John conveyed to us is that Larry had left him to be with Tom, and that did pain him a lot. But John told us that he was not responsible and knew nothing about the murder of Larry or Tom.
Sure seems like John Rarick had plenty to gain from Larry's death, but does that make him a murderer?
John's alibi for the crime was he was in a chat room in North Hollywood somewhere. Whether you can prove the alibi or not is another thing.
So when we interviewed John Rarick and we asked him where he was between these hours, he was able to produce documents that were date and time stamped that showed his name and the fact that he was in this chat room. And of course, we followed up with the internet service provider to be sure that these were genuine documents. One of the things we did, ruling John Rarick out as a suspect, is we looked at his feet and we got impressions of his feet. And his feet were much larger than the footprints at the crime scene. And we knew that there is no way physically that his feet could have made those impressions at the crime scene. And we were certain there was only one person that left bloody footprints at the crime scene.
The ominous trail of bloody footprints, along with the coroner's findings, brings investigators one step closer to the cold-blooded killer's identity.
The coroner did an autopsy on both victims. And in terms of the damage done to the victims, Tom had more stab wounds, and one of the stab wounds was right into the eye, and another one was real close to the other eye. When you have this violent type of activity, the possibility of having a past lover is certainly somebody you want to look at. Who are the past lovers of Tom Whitney?
So, you keep trying to get in shape and it keeps not working. I'm Lacey Green, a super trainer with Body. That's BODI.com. And I've got a story you have to hear. I have a client who came to me because she was really frustrated that every gym or trainer she tried made her feel bad because she was a beginner. She had tried it all and she just felt humiliated. And that's when we started working together and I took her through my 3-week program called For Beginners Only. Once she realized that she wasn't the problem and that she just needed the right program, she started to get results. And now she's completely unstoppable and feeling so strong and confident. And I can do the same for you. On the Body app, subscribers lose 5 to 10 pounds consistently in their first month. And I bet you will too. In fact, CNN underscore just named Body best fitness app. And right now, Body has a special introductory offer. The next 500 new users who sign up for a year of Body save 72%. That's just 33 cents a day. All you have to do is go to body.com. That's BODI.com.
The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Don't waste time on apps that don't work. Babbel's conversation-based teaching prepares you for real-life situations. And studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others continue to prove Babbel is better. One study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/truecrime. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/truecrime, spelled BABBEL.com/truecrime. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Just a day after lovers Larry Wong and Tom Whitney are found dead in their Orange County condominium, Irvine detectives take a trip down memory lane in search of a suspect.
When Tom came out in the 90s, it was a different world. And I think that Tom was almost like a teenager because he was excited finding new people that didn't know him as a serious musician, who just knew him as who he was, Tom. We had known Tom for so long. We were family. And to lose a family in such a violent way is very sad. I think that when he was experimenting and he was meeting new people, he perhaps met some people that he would not have ever had any contact with under different circumstances.
So now we have a whole team of detectives that is going to the home, searching for evidence, looking for anything related to the crime. We found a whole slew of cards. They were greeting cards that were addressed to Tom Whitney, and they were signed by someone named Choi.
During this time, we could not figure out who Choi was. We didn't have any name other than Choi.
We had a lot of people calling us and telling us, hey, I know Tom, I want to give you information. And we asked friends if they know who Choi was.
When the police call me, I explain to them, I don't know his name, but I think I know who did it. And I said, I think that was this young Asian man that Tom had been dating. I always called him Tom on his birthday, which is April 15th. This young man who he had seen before was actually pounding on his doors and trying to get in when I called him. And Tom was hysterical. I mean, this guy was screaming. He was running around the house, pounding on the doors, pounding on the windows. Tom then told me that he had come in before through the garage. And I said, Tom, just call the police. He said, no, I can't do that. I can't call the police. He said, what would the neighbors say? And I said, this is California. I mean, things happen. He said, no, not in this, not where I live, which was a very protected community.
Learning from Tom's sister that Tom had sold a car to this person named Choi, we were able to run the license plate and see who the new owner was, and through some other checks and some other connections, identify the possible owner of this car as Vincent Chung.
My name is Dave Lopez. I was a reporter in Los Angeles, Orange County, since 1972, retired a little over a year ago. In 1999, I was assigned to the Orange County Bureau. What the police were comfortable with is the fact that they were not dealing with some massive, crazy lunatic who was gonna go out and do the same thing again. It wasn't a case where the media, said we've got a killer on the loose, and they just had to go out and find out who it was. And Chung, who was known as Choi in all these love letters, he was their suspect.
There's a strong probability this double murder was a crime of passion. Now that there's no doubt who the mysterious Choi is, detectives dig into his former relationship with Tom Whitney.
Once we discover who Vincent is, we find that he has a pretty big history. Theft, he likes to steal things. He's not a really upstanding citizen. We did discover that Vincent Chung had a relationship with Tom, and started about 6 months earlier. Vincent and Tom are together, but they break up right about the time that Tom and Larry start coming together.
Tom was not particularly proud of that relationship with Vincent. It was not something serious for him. He was finding who he was and living a different life for a while.
When Tom said that, you know, I don't want you anymore, it was devastating for John. It was absolutely devastating.
When Tom ended that relationship and then subsequently started another relationship with another man, I think that freaked him out.
It's clear to detectives that Vincent Chung couldn't get his pent-up desire for Tom off his mind.
Chung, he'd always have a camera with him, and he would just take picture after picture after picture of him and Tom, or Tom by himself. He would go into the house, and he would sit on the piano, naked, waiting for Tom to come home. Sometimes he would surprise him in the garage. Tom would drive into the garage, and Chung would be hiding somewhere, and then pop up out of nowhere. And he just would not leave him alone. I mean, you talk about an infatuation, that was it.
From talking with other friends, there's information that Vincent, he's seen coming to the house when he's not supposed to be there, knocking on the door, leaving presents, leaving gifts. He seems to be obsessed.
At this point, Vincent Chung became our primary suspect.
And our goal was to interview him to see where he was the early morning hours of July 27th.
He was extremely upset because we were talking to him about him being involved in this incident where these men died.
Days after news of a shocking double homicide rocked one of California's best places to live, eccentric Vincent Chung tops the Irvine Police Department's suspect list. But did this obsessed ex really stab Tom Whitney and his lover, Larry Wong, to death?
Once the investigators were able to determine that Vincent Chung was available possibly to commit the crime, looking into his history, they discovered he has a warrant for his arrest for a parole violation, basically. The decision was made, let's get him into custody ASAP, just in case. If he is, in fact, the guilty party, we don't want him absconding and leaving or hurting somebody.
Police knew who they were looking for. It was just a case now of trying to find him.
We have enough information that now Vincent Chung is considered a suspect. So we now have a location where we think he's living. At this point, we're talking to the district attorney and to judges about certain search warrants that we want to write and obtain for his home for the 1990 Chevy Lumina that we were looking for. Meanwhile, now that we have an address where we think he lives, we have a special team that we sent out to the residence. It was a residence in San Gabriel, where we believe that he may live with his mother.
We went to Vincent's mother's house in the San Gabriel Valley and spoke to her.
She was very helpful and said that Vincent has had some issues and hasn't been around the house and was not, at least she couldn't give him an alibi for the night of the murder. But she did say that her son has problems. She said that he has been in trouble. He's been incarcerated for theft.
Police are confident they can outsmart Vincent Chung and waste no time trying to track him down.
We had a stakeout on Vincent's house.
With the unit on Alpine and Spring Creek, outside.
In hopes that maybe he would return and we could find him.
Calling device and they did not see him.
As we are in the stakeout, there's a motel across the street or nearby. And we noticed, actually, Vincent had come out of that motel and was coming across the street to his mom's house. And so there he was, and right in front of us, we ended up arresting him. The arrest was for the parole violation, and he understood. He even said, I figured that would happen.
So once he's in custody, and we, at this point, we already have signed search warrants, and we also were able to associate him with a hotel room that was across the street from his residence. And we found out that he had checked in to the hotel room on the evening of the 27th, which would have been the same day that we discovered the crime scene. And so we were able to do what we call a piggyback warrant and able to write another warrant to search a hotel room.
Detectives have taken Vincent Chung into custody. With search warrants in hand, would they find the evidence they needed to tie Vincent to the scene of the crime?
Pursuant to the search warrant, we searched the garage. We found a car that was under a blue tarp, pulled back the blue tarp, and that was the 1990 Chevy Lumina that we were looking for. The car that helped us make that initial connection to Vincent, it was in his mom's garage. And so we had a warrant for that car, and rather than searching the car there, we had this car towed to the Orange County Crime Lab so we could do a better analysis of it.
During the time once Vincent's under arrest and we did a search warrant on the house, we discovered a few interesting things. The date on the 27th, he had goodbye written on his calendar.
This was the date of the murder of Tom and Larry, and would kind of indicate to you that Vincent had said his final goodbye to these two individuals.
Our goal was to interview him to see where he was in the early morning hours of July 27th.
Now's the time to talk. We have to hear it.
He was extremely upset because we were talking to him about him being involved in this incident where these men died. And his answers were not consistent with innocence of somebody being able, because they would be able to answer the questions we're asking regarding the activities that they were doing at that time. And he just could not answer. He would just mumble something or mumble, I don't know, when the question's pretty simple and he should know if he was innocent.
Were they sleeping or doing something else?
I don't know what happened.
Vincent was very small, kind of demure. You wouldn't pick him out as, oh, I think that guy could kill two people with knives. He doesn't look like that. He's not a big man. He's very kind of meek in his speaking and his actions. So he doesn't match the description you'd think of a killer who could do this to two people.
Have Larry Wong and Tom Whitney's suspected killer, Vincent Chung, in custody. Getting a confession out of him might be easier said than done.
Larry and I went to the jail facility where Vincent was being held, and we went there, we Mirandized him, and we had a conversation with him.
Okay, we know that what happened out there probably wasn't something that was premeditated. We know it happened. You just want to verify why.
I don't know nothing.
It was really unusual because at first Vincent Chung began to become very emotional, almost hysterical at times. He was trying to say he didn't even know who Tom was. As we kept on talking to him over the course of more than an hour, then at that point, he began to talk about the fact that he did have a relationship with Tom and provided a little more detail about that, but never admitted to killing Tom or Larry.
Like when we go out, see a movie, and I always cut the poster into the car. So telling you what we do, what we did, I always put on the car, and say thank you. Sometimes I feel like he during the relationship, he bought me a lot of stuff. He bought me shoes, about $400 shoes. I feel like I owe him something.
So we did ask him about the calendar after we had found it, and that it had said goodbye in the calendar on July 27th. And he explained it that he had planned on killing himself. And so writing goodbye on that date was a reflection of the fact that he was going to kill himself. We thought at the time that the fact that he said that goodbye referenced the fact that he was going to try and kill himself as a convenient alibi or deflection.
While interviewing Vincent Chung, it was very interesting because when you have an innocent person and you're talking to them about a topic and they're innocent, therefore they can't answer your questions without worry because they're innocent. And therefore they will answer your questions 90 to 100% of the time fairly accurately as much as they can. And it pretty much fits like a puzzle.
I don't know.
When did you start remembering that something happened?
I don't know.
What'd you do with your clothes, Vincent?
My clothes.
However, if you have a guilty person and you want to interview them about this incident that they're guilty of doing something, therefore they have to lie, it causes stress because they must lie about certain things. And so what I look for in an interview is to see how upfront they are, how easy it is for them to answer questions, and do they use techniques to avoid answering the questions? And in this case, with Vincent, that was exactly what you could hear him have all kinds of anxiety for answering questions.
Why you die? Why leave me? Why you die?
We were able to elicit more and more information that helped us, again, paint a picture of the situation to learn more about him. And at times, he was very matter-of-fact, and he talked about Tom and their relationship in vivid detail. And he talked about how much they cared for each other, and he talked about how he was showering with gifts.
I put the gift in front of his house, so I thought he might talk to me at that time I had all the birthday cards, you know. I think I wrote him about 10 or 20 birthday cards.
He admitted that he had made 100 plus cards and letters, and he had given them as a present to Tom, and Tom was not happy about getting the present. And he was very angry and upset that Tom didn't accept his present.
If you get to me, I will give it to charity. And he's so mean. You will call his friend. And suddenly he say, oh, you want me to call the police for you? So I said, fine. So he's very cold and he's very mean. I say, forget it.
As we were deep in the interrogation of Vincent, he was still talking. And
I love you so bad.
He took responsibility for what we would describe as stalking behavior, for being obsessive and not taking no for an answer.
Once in custody, we had Vincent take his shoes off, put socks on.
We brought rolls of butcher paper and we brought ink with us. We wet his feet to simulate like if his socks were wet in blood. We rolled his feet in ink and then we had him walk along rolls of butcher paper and to see what kind of footprint he left.
And I watched very closely, and I watched him crinkle up his toes to make his foot smaller as he walked. I called him on it and told him to straighten him out. He was reluctant, and it was very interesting, though, because I'm thinking to myself, if he is innocent, he has no idea who killed these guys, and he has no idea how big their foot is or how small their foot is, and therefore, why is he crinkling up his toes? So that was huge because I watched it and called him on it.
It's all bottled up inside of you, Vincent. Vincent, just try to get it out of your system.
Gotta get off your chest, Vincent.
I was there to assist the crime lab doing testing on the car, telling them that if this is the right suspect and had this car, that he killed people, showed the scene with the blood, therefore probably had lots of blood on him, and so we're looking for any blood that might be found in that car.
So we went over that car with a fine-tooth comb, and in this case, a combination of different chemicals were used to try to bring out areas where there could be evidence, such as blood evidence, that isn't visible to the naked eye.
Investigators Montgomery and Hamill suspect Vincent isn't telling them the whole truth. And so Detective Jacobson steps in to try to coax a confession from him.
Do you know what DNA is? Have you ever heard about that? DNA is what they call a genetic marker. It's like a fingerprint of your blood. In fact, though, it's better than a fingerprint.
When the crime lab called and told me what the results were, my jaw dropped.
With telltale DNA results back from the lab, Irvine detectives are determined to get Vincent Chung to finally admit he's to blame for the murders of Tom Whitney and Larry Wong.
There's a running board that's just runs right below the driver's seat. And on that running board, again, through enhancing with chemicals, crime lab was able to find some blood droplets that, again, weren't visible to naked eye. Crime lab called and they told us that in that blood sample, they were able to extract DNA from both Larry and Tom and the suspect.
That shows that there's a connection between the victims, and we know that night there was a connection between the victims, and whoever did it very possibly had both bloods on them in great amounts because of the sheer damage done in that house.
So when we found this out, that this blood sample contained DNA from all three, that, in our opinion, was an incredibly important piece of evidence because it's showing that there is combined DNA in this blood droplets on the running board of a car that at this point we believe was the getaway vehicle, so to speak, that was used by the suspect to drive to the crime scene and then leave the crime scene.
Before investigators confront Vincent Chung once again, shocking information from one of Chung's friends gives them even more ammunition.
At one point of the investigation, before Vincent was formally charged with the crime, we were contacted by his friend named Drew Meesimson. And Drew was a very good friend of Vincent's. And so Drew reached out to us after he saw on the news what had happened to Tom and Larry. And Drew had shared that Vincent had left a message on his voice recorder. And this message was left on the 27th.
Hi, Drew. I did it. Yes, I did that. I did it.
Drew was a very good friend of Vincent's, and so thinking back about Drew's courage and what he did to bring this information forward, it was something that was a pivotal piece of evidence for which we were grateful that he contacted us.
I guess I will, this is my last call anyway, and hopefully you understand my situation, so if I can say goodbye.
Due to the fact that we don't have a video of everything that happened at the time of the murder, we can make some reasonable suggestions as to what might have occurred.
He probably had a key to the residence still. He took off his shoes to be quiet. He grabbed two knives from the butcher block. He quietly went downstairs and attacked them while they were sleeping.
Both of them awake, there was a struggle, and he's stabbing with both knives. Tom is not struck in a vital area right away, so he's able to live longer and fight a little bit longer. While Larry probably was hit in his abdomen somewhere where it took him down faster, basically stab, stab, stab until he's tired, and then he gets to go back and put the knives away and leave.
He was formally charged with 187 of the Penal Code, murder.
I got a call from the Assistant District Attorney of Orange County, and they said, we would like you to testify because I could help them because of this weird little phone call to Tom on his birthday that turned into the only person who could actually tie Vincent to Tom. Not only would I be happy to do it, I felt that it was the least that I could do to help Tom.
I went down and stayed with my sister and went to every day of the trial. It was a strange, strange thing. Vincent didn't look the least bit vulnerable, remiss, remorseful. He looked like an empty body to me. He looked like he was dead.
After I testified, the assistant district attorney came out to me and said, went very well. I said, well, I just said what I had to do.
The prosecutor said that it was, you know, it was a DNA case. And I think it was over a period of 4 days that the jury deliberated.
When I heard the guilty verdict, there was a tremendous feeling of relief. And it's over.
Tom was someone who did not allow life to destroy him. That's, to me, the thing that I still hold, was that here was a man who had to go through hell to find a life.
Larry and Tom would have been very happy, and I suspect they would have found it possible to get married in the time that has passed from then to now. It's amazing how much has passed.
For someone to come and cut their life short just seemed like such a travesty and tragedy, not only for the gay community, but for the Irvine community, Irvine family, was something that I think resonated for many years thereafter.
And you know, I don't even cry much now. I think having this kind of an experience of going through with Tom makes you stronger. It makes you more aware. It makes you appreciate things.
What came first, the chicken or the egg? Spoiler alert, it's neither. At Happy Egg, we believe happiness of the hens is what actually came first, because without happy hens, there would be no such thing as happy eggs. You know, eggs with delicious orange yolks. Those come from hens who are raised the happy way on 8+ acres of family-owned farms. Choose happy at happyegg.com and look for the yellow carton at a store near you.
Happy
Egg.